What does it mean to be free? What has the war economy done to the lives of Americans? Join others for all the solutions at thespiritualun.org, because another world is possible. No human being is an enemy of another human being. War is a manufactured and artificial state. There is another way to live in this world through a new system that is uplifting to all. Let's go to a higher love. What did Jesus really teach? Did he teach onward Christian soldiers and bomb one another? No. John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Abraham Lincoln, our founding fathers, and you, your neighbors, all reaching for the best part of the human spirit. TheSpiritualUN.org. Come together with us, carrying forward this nation's founders' universal ideals through the rejection of revenge, aggression, racism, war, and the debt slavery system. Real men don't kill. War and the debt slavery system is a crime against us all, against God, against all life, and is not fit for a progressive world. Join together here at thespiritualun.org, and we will build that new world for the 99% of us, without any leaders, corrupt as they are, because in the new system that is uplifting to all, they aren't necessary anymore. thespiritualun.org.
It's just a ride, and we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
And now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, Minnesota, Dreaming the New American Dream, with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek.
Welcome to another episode of the New American Dream radio show. We welcome you. Sometime back, in April, I think, we read a letter from Julius Awafong from Cameroon, who had written an open letter, well, actually a letter to President Obama, which was talking about how disappointed he was with the way he had dealt with some things in Africa. I haven't spoken to Julius recently, but I wonder what he thinks of the latest efforts that America is doing in Africa. Another place to invade, right? It's just amazing how many wars we have managed to be involved in this time. It's crazy. Anyway, we got a comment yesterday on this open letter, and I'm going to read the comment that was posted on our website. It says, in case it's beyond your comprehension, President Obama is an elected official who is here to serve his country, United States of America, not Africa. How dare you chastise our president for any slights you think he has in failing to take up issues for Africa? His job to look after America. You owe him and the American people an apology. Barack Hussein Obama is an amazing man, a consummate humanitarian, and a brilliant global diplomat. He will tell you when he can, but he will help you when he can, but he has a few pans on the fire at the moment. Your criticism is unfounded and ignorant in the extreme. Well, I'm afraid that the only part of that comment I can agree with is the last one, and I'd apply it to the comment. The criticism is unfounded and ignorant in the extreme. It's just amazing how people can miss the point. an amazing man, a consummate humanitarian, and a brilliant global diplomat. He's managed to get us involved in 7 or 8 wars, killing people all over the globe, continues to turn the United States into a police state. Boy, it's just amazing. Something else that I'd like to read to you, and here's one I do agree with. Kevin Barrett said, the new book, Johnny Moon, takes on the JFK assassination and its era through the eyes of a third grader in Catholic school. I've read JFK assassination fiction by Don DeLillo and Norman Mailer, and can tell you that this new novel not only is Mike Palachek's best book yet, it's much better than DeLillo's and Mailer's efforts to do justice to the most important event in U.S. history. Howard Hunt, during his confession to helping kill JFK as part of a CIA plot directed by Cord Meyer and Lyndon B. Johnson, admitted to his son, St. John, that 11-22-63 was a dark day for democracy. In fact, it was the last day of American democracy, the end of the republic, the beginning of the era of pure pathocracy we're now trying to shake off but won't. Unless we wake up to how bad it is and launch a second American Revolution. Mike's book gets everything right. Its rich mix of realism and fantasy, as viewed by a precocious third grader, is alternately hilarious and horrific. It's unlike anything else you've ever read. And now, I'm going to hand the show over to the author of that book, my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Thank you, Chuck. Good to talk to you again tonight. Tonight we welcome a pair of new guests. Corbin Fowler will be speaking to us from Edinburgh, Pennsylvania. Edinburgh is near Erie. Harvey Wasserman will be coming to us from Cape Cod later in the show. It's again time for the New American Dream Radio Show, the American Russian novel All We Need Is More Vodka Radio Hour, because we have the winds of our own totalitarian society freezing the land solid, a tortured tundra. Some of those who have spoken the truth are no longer here. You might notice that their chairs at the Thanksgiving adult big table are empty, their relatives having sent them to Siberia with a roll of their eyes. So let us begin. Here we go. Scooch up to the samovar. Maybe leave your hat and boots on. Fill your peasant hands with a warm drink. And listen always for the sound of hoofbeats on the ice. The new American dream means never having to say some question or idea is not valid. We are allowed to ask any questions we have. There are no wrong questions. There is no hidden black military budget. There are no UFO files Americans cannot see. No JFK documents that will not be open during our lifetimes, no destroyed RFK murder photos by the LA police, and no evidence from Ground Zero whisked away before we could even look at it. We are not the USSR of the 1960s. This is supposed to be America. That's our dream, to become America, the new America, the real hope of the world. We have a dream of bringing the United States politicians, journalists and generals who have brought about this long 10-year war and debacle to trial and put on TV just like OJ every goddamn afternoon so every American can watch, just like the McCarthy hearings and the JFK funeral procession. Because what we need is a new American dream, not of new homes and toasters and microwaves, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were. Right now we live on lies. We subsist on lies, but it's not really living. 9/11 was an inside job. Bush, Cheney, Rice, Powell, Rumsfeld, Ashcroft, Obama, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, they all know that, and yet they refuse to acknowledge what they know. They kill and continue to kill. What we need in America is a truth commission like they had in South Africa to heal their broken country. Our country is surely broken as well. We need a truth commission. We need to put certain people on the stand, and we need to be allowed to ask questions. The troops are not protecting us. That is someone's spin on the day's news. somebody's advertising slogan in someone else's sermon. The troops serve the empire. They are not heroes. They kill and plunder for the empire. American bases overseas, some 700 and more, serve nobody but the empire. The heroes in our country are the protesters, the ones who go face to face with the empire, those who will begin to gather in Washington, D.C., who began to gather in Washington October 6th and continue to gather around the country. The courageous Occupy movement. You have to know that Barack Obama knows the whole truth about the 9/11 attacks. He's complicit. He has lied. He has continued the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan based on a lie, and he knows he's lying. He lied right to our faces on national television when he said that Osama bin Laden had been killed and buried at sea. Osama bin Laden was buried at sea, and Jessica Lynch was rescued heroically. The USA does not torture, of course. Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. George Bush won the 2000 and 2004 elections. And see, there's a plane in that hole in Shanksville. It went all the way into that hole, and no, there's no blood and no bodies and no luggage scattered or plane parts. And Osama bin Laden was buried at sea. You know, if we really thought there was a plane in there, bodies in there, wouldn't we have gotten our hands and knees and dug with our hands and got all the equipment we could and dug down there? But no, we walked around and in silence, because actually we knew there was nothing in there, but we lied. Remember the anthrax letters which said, "Are you afraid?" Those were not written with a rock and chisel like Fred Flintstone from the recesses of some cave in Afghanistan. Those letters came from persons within our own government. It's like a horror movie, and the killer is in the house with us. These killers are right here with us, and they want us to be afraid. We cannot be afraid.
WorldNewsTrust.com is a new site that is trying to define the new mainstream. Their founder, Francis Goodwin, is a veteran journalist who set out on his own a few years ago and has slowly carved out a niche. What does the site do? It tells the truth and provides a place for intelligent columnists to talk about what's really happening in America. It's a good site with people who care about what's going on in America and the world. It's a great site with many loyal writers, including Ramsey Baroud, Harvey Wasserman, Mickey Z. There are too many to list them all. Some content is published on World News Trust first. Some is published elsewhere and copied to World News Trust. We also welcome back World News Trust, who continue to support our show and host our website. Visit World News Trust for a dose of news with enlightened and informed opinion. It's not like Fox or CNN or the New York Times. It's World News Trust, defining the new mainstream in online journalism. Visit them today and tell them the New American Dream Radio Show sent you. WorldNewsTrust.com.
Hello, I'm Tom Brady. Because I'm afraid if I tell you the truth, I won't be able to live my good life in America, be a pro football player on TV, rich, have a car and a house and a family in America. If I tell you about America and its soldiers and veterans, I will be destroyed. I'm Joseph, high school football coach. I'm a coward. I'm a co-conspirator in the raping and murdering and plundering of the world by America's military. I'm Ann, emergency room nurse. I'm an American. I'm afraid of other Americans. I'm really afraid. I'm Bill, your dentist. I want to be liked. I don't want to be an outcast. I'm Mrs. Thompson, your daughter's third period English teacher. I want to be able to exist, at least exist within a thin bubble. I get one chance at living, and I'm not going to waste it by telling you the truth. Thank you to all our nation's veterans and on-duty military for protecting us. You keep us free. You're heroes.
So I jumped on the fence and yelled at the House, "Hey, what gives you the right to put millions in prison, bomb other countries, torture, make me pay taxes for the military? Sign, sign, everywhere sign. Health care, road repair, build school here. Cold War, Iraq War, war on drugs. Do this, don't do that. Can't you read the signs?"
Tonight, we welcome Corbin Fowler, a professor at Edinburgh University of Pennsylvania, tenured professor of philosophy. He's originally from Wyoming. He was a campus leader during student power and anti-war movements of the late 60s and early 70s. Worked to impeach Richard Nixon. And I'm looking forward to talking to Corbyn, see what he thinks about the demonstrations today and how they compare with those in the past. Welcome, Corbyn, to the New American Dream Radio Show.
Thank you.
How's the weather in northeastern or northwestern Pennsylvania these days?
Well, on the weather here, it's tonight. There's lake effect snow, and it's cold, and that's the way it is here for about 3 or 4 months in the winter time and the late fall. It's not very good.
Well, you and Mike probably have similar weather. He's outside of Duluth, Minnesota. So,
yeah.
As I was introducing you, I suggested what I'm interested in talking about. What do you think of the Occupy movement?
Well, this is the first time that I've had some real hope or optimism about significant democratic change for social justice in the country in, I don't know, 40 years. I mean, I've been around long enough not to be really thinking that every protest movement will succeed and that progressive movements are sooner or later just by their willpower going to succeed. But from the time that we were successful in some limited ways back in the late 60s and early 70s and ending the war in Vietnam and getting the right to vote for 18-year-olds, and a few other things. It's been a long, difficult, dark valley for people who are progressives in this country. And for the most part, we've had some small successes. But after the Reagan Revolution and the right-wing ascendancy in our country, it's been pretty depressing for many of us. And, well, from what I can tell so far in the Occupy Wall Street movement that started in this country and then spread around the world, I feel optimistic about it because I think that it's in touch with a lot of frustration and righteous anger that many people feel about how a very, very few people in the country that whose values are best expressed by the Wall Street paper pushers. That Main Street is being and has been for a long time really ignored and expected to actually be a kind of bailout for the problems that the wealthy have. I think that that there's a lot of hope here, and I don't know what's going to happen. I don't have a crystal ball, but I think this is a fairly widespread movement that has a lot of deep sympathy from a lot of sectors in the American public. I mean, I know there's, you know, I mean, there are definitely elements, some of the elements of the Tea Party who despise this, but I think that that's a pretty broad-based movement.
Well, those are some very, very good observations. Have you, is there anything going on your college campus and the nearby towns or cities with the Occupy movement?
Yes, there is. There's both in Erie, Pennsylvania, which is about 20 minutes away. It's Erie's probably a population around 100,000 people, and with the suburbs, you know, more than that. But, yeah, there's been an Occupy Wall Street movement there for, I would say, about the last month or so. And, you know, and also there's one developing here on the campus of Edinburgh University. It's, I would say that it's in its growing pains. There, you know, the numbers have not been huge, but there have been a number of turnouts here in Erie, Pennsylvania. There's a central park in the downtown area that has been the center of some of the rallies and the overnight, you know, sleepouts and tents and where the marches have gone back and forth to various places. We could use a lot more numbers. You know, I've been to two or three of them myself, and my wife's been involved from time to time. But, yeah, there's definitely people here that feel the pulse of the Occupy Wall Street movement. And, you know, we'll just have to wait. You know, it's early. We'll have to wait and see if we connect with enough people in the mainstream to shake. You know, as my wife said, she'd like to see a sign, and she'd like to make a sign that says, maybe you recall from the old Cold War days when Ronnie Reagan said to Gorbachev, tear down that wall. Well, she says, tear down that Wall Street. And I think a lot of people are feeling similarly.
Well, I'm certainly hoping that it will continue and will continue to grow. And I agree with you completely that it's the most promising thing in 40 years. As a matter of fact, that's the same number I threw out some time back. So that's interesting that we're in sync on that. I know when I was in college, I used to gather up groups of students and take road trips down to Washington. We marched about the war in Vietnam. We marched about voting. We marched about civil rights. It was a very exciting time, and I think it really did make a difference. But there certainly hasn't been much since.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the you know, there have been a lot of reasons for that, but. One of the primary motivating influences back in the late 60s and early 70s was the draft. And so it
Absolutely.
Helped bring the war home to a lot of people in a very personal, significant way. And once they went to the volunteer armed force and had everybody, well, when they had people, professional people joining the armed forces, you know, by their choice, and making all those sacrifices, you know, killing and dying for their country without most people having to do anything except maybe put stickers in their car that says support our troops. Once that happened, I mean, the connection between what was happening on the part of the corrupt government foreign policy and the abandonment of taking care of people at home, once that happened, it was just hard for people to connect and feel what needed to be done. But in the last few years, with so many people being out of work and not really seeing a light at the end of the tunnel, and people having, especially younger people, having to take 2 and 3 really crap jobs that don't pay well, and they, you know, minimum wage jobs that don't have any benefits, and then starting to pile up these big burdens of student loans if they're trying to make it by going to college. I mean, people are starting to feel the pain, and well, I think that makes a difference.
I think you're probably quite right about that. People had become apathetic and selfish, and that's not a very good combination.
Well, you know, that's true. But I confess, even I have felt pretty impotent, powerless, and hopeless for a long time. I didn't really see a way to move forward and make things better. And I think that I'm at least a little bit more aware than most Americans are about some of these things. And I still felt that way. And I think there's not very much in our American way of life that gives people a feeling of empowerment. I mean, if you're one of the 1%, if you're doing well on Wall Street, or if you're a CEO for one of the big multinational corporations, or if you're the Koch brothers, or if you're Rush Limbaugh and you get to make a lot of money by being a blowhard on the radio, I mean, you get a lot of empowerment reinforcement, but most Americans don't get that, and they don't get much encouragement. You know, for example, I talked to my classes recently about trying to make our country more democratic, and just in something really simple like voting, we don't do much to encourage people to vote. We give lip service to it, and then we say, oh, isn't it terrible how few people vote, because most of the industrialized democracies have much, much higher consistent voter turnouts than we do. But, I mean, most of those places will have a national holiday when people vote, where people don't have to work, or they'll vote on the, you know, over a weekend on Saturday and Sunday. They try to make it really convenient because it's really important to get people to vote. In our country, you know, we have this tradition of having people, especially in the national elections, vote on like the first or second Tuesday in November. Well, I guess it could be worse. They could we could have them vote on the first or second Tuesday in January or February. I mean, that's really bad for people in Duluth or near Erie, Pennsylvania. But basically, we don't do – it's almost like we feel, it has to be painful if it's worthwhile. And if you're not willing to suffer – you know, if you've got a couple jobs or if you have a hard time getting there, well, if you don't find a way to get there after your job or go there before you go to your job, you know, well, then you're just not really a committed American. Well, I think that's nonsense, because the people who don't have those kind of 9-to-5 jobs who can take time off from work, the one percenters, it's very convenient for them to vote. It's very convenient for them to support these super PACs where they don't have to even disclose that they're supporting this person or that person, you know, in whatever party. So it's very convenient for them, but it's not convenient for Main Street, and I think Main Street is pretty close to being fed up with it.
I think you're right. It's set up so that the people that have time and money can vote easily, and it sways elections. It sways elections if the votes are actually counted, which I'm not entirely sure that happens anymore. But that's a different, whole different topic.
Yeah.
How are your classes are in philosophy, right?
Yeah, I teach philosophy classes. I teach intro level classes, and I also teach some upper level classes too.
Mm-hmm. Some of the things I've read of yours really brought philosophy to life, I thought. I imagine that your classes are interesting and fun for the students, as well as an opportunity for learning.
So. Well, let's put it this way: I try to make them that way, but honestly, I think the honest answer is that they're challenging and rewarding for some, and probably just a pain and boring for others.
I suppose that describes any class in any college or high school, anywhere.
Yeah, probably.
Do you have any new projects going on? You're writing anything or speaking anywhere or anything you might like to share with the radio audience?
Well, right now, I'm 63, and I try to put my energy into what I think I can do the most good with and that I have a passion for. So as far as writing is concerned, I have some small projects involved, but I right now have a really deep passion for philosophy and popular culture. It's one of the classes that I teach, and one of the things that I think some of your listeners will find really strange, but I'm a huge fan of J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter stories and films, and one of the reasons that I'm a huge fan of it is that there's some really huge philosophical and ethical issues that she raises that are really, really important in real life today. And I'll just give you an example of that. In her novels, which is, I'm sure you know, have been extremely successful not only in this country but around the world, and they've had a huge influence on especially young people's desire to read. And one of the things that occurs in her novels is that in this fantasy world that the characters live in, there are three kinds of actions that are taboo, that are forbidden, and if you violate any one of them, you end up going to this really hideous prison for life They don't have they don't have capital punishment, but they send people to life for violating one of these taboos. And one of the taboos is murder. Another taboo is torture, and another taboo is dominating someone's mind and behavior, and you know, so that they do what you want them to do, no matter what they feel. Well, I think issues like that are really important today. I mean, like the 1% are dominating the rest of us through their economic clout, and they use the police to enforce what they consider is in their own best interest, even if that means pepper spraying 84-year-old women and so forth. And so, you know, I think, and of course we know the issue of torture was raised because now we have most of the Republican nominees saying that they're in favor of waterboarding. And we know that Dick Cheney is all in favor of waterboarding, and even President Obama has not made one single move to prosecute any of these people for their violations of international law and also for United States law. So, I mean, some of these issues that are raised in a really fantasy, wonderful way in these Harry Potter stories and films are really relevant today, and the nice thing about it is that young people who are still idealistic and haven't had their spirit crushed, they identify with these things and they find them admirable, and they want to see a world like that. And I find that just kind of wonderfully subversive and beautifully subversive, and I want to talk about those ethical issues, and I don't care about so much the ideology of capitalism versus socialism. Although, if somebody said, well, what are you? I suppose I'd say I was a democratic socialist with strong environmental leanings. But aside from that, I believe very strongly that we need a world in which there, is less killing, a lot less killing, no torture. And I don't think one group of people, for whatever reasons, whether for wealth or power, ought to dominate everybody else. And so I'm really involved in that, and I've been putting a lot of energy into creating something that we call up here Edinburgh Potter Fest. We just had our first annual Edinburgh Potter Fest up here for 6 days in October, and we intend to have it happen every fall for 6 days for the foreseeable future. And this brings together community and the campus for educational purposes, for fun, and brings a shot of business for local businesses. Boy, you know, around the country, Main Street and small businesses are really hurting. And so we're trying to find ways to give a shot in the arm to these small businesses in our town. And, our first experiment with this Edinburgh Potter Fest was a huge success. And some of these small businesses that got involved got the best week of their life in a long time because people came out, families came out. They loved celebrating the messages and the fun and so forth from this Harry Potter story and film. So I know that's going to sound odd to a lot of your listeners, but that's where my energy is right now.
Okay, well, maybe a little odd, but I'm a firm believer in learning the ethical investigating ethical questions wherever they may arise. And there are many works of fiction that have I've learned a great deal.
Me too.
Well, Corbin, it's been a pleasure visiting with you tonight. We're going to have to call it short. You know, this is a 15-minute interview. But maybe we can do it again sometime, a couple of months or three.
And, it's been nice talking with you.
Oh, great. Thank you very much, and good night.
Good night.
Mean to be free. What has the war economy done to the lives of Americans? Join others for all the solutions at thespiritualun.org, because another world is possible. No human being is an enemy of another human being. War is a manufactured and artificial state. There is another way to live in this world through a new system that is uplifting to all. Let's go to a higher love. What did Jesus really teach? Did he teach onward Christian soldiers and bomb one another? No. John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Abraham Lincoln, our founding fathers, and you, your neighbors, all reaching for the best part of the human spirit. TheSpiritualUN.org. Come together with us, carrying forward this nation's founders' universal ideals through the rejection of revenge, aggression, racism, war, and the debt slavery system. Real men don't kill. War and the debt slavery system is a crime against us all, against God, against all life, and is not fit for a progressive world. Join together here at thespiritualun.org, and we will build that new world for the 99% of us, without any leaders, corrupt as they are, because in the new system that is uplifting to all, they aren't necessary anymore. thespiritualun.org.
A thank you tonight to all our heroes and protectors, Elmo, Bert, Ernie, Big Bird, Oscar the Grouch. You are the best of the best. Thank you for your service. You are not puppets. You are our heroes and our protectors.
Our thanks go out tonight to a new sponsor, Bazooka Up the Wazoo. The new patriotic toy your child will want this Christmas. Don't be the only one on your block without a bazooka up the wazoo. Everyone has a bazooka up the wazoo. Even Grandma's got one, and Grandpa, too. The neighborhood kids will want to do their patriotic duty and find the next bazooka up the wazoo, because every terrorist in tarnation has a bazooka up the wazoo. They're hard to find. Already as hard to find as the Tickle Me Elmo. Look under the Christmas tree, in your next-door neighbor's bedroom window, and all carry-on luggage, any cell phone or email conversation. Bazooka up the wazoo. Don't leave home without it.
Now we'd like to welcome our special guest, Harvey Wasserman. Harvey Wasserman is author of many books, a dozen books, and also with Bob Petrakis, Harvey helped to break many of the major stories surrounding the theft of the 2000 and 2004 presidential elections. Harvey's been a radio talk show host in Columbus with Bonnie Raitt, Jackson Brown, Graham Nash, and others. Harvey helped found nuke3.org. He teaches U.S. history, Western civilization at cultural diversity at Columbus State Community College and Capital University in Central Ohio. In 1968, Harvey helped found the legendary Anti-War Liberation News Service. In 1973, he helped pioneer the global grassroots movement against atomic reactors and helped organize mass demonstration at Seabrook and New York City's 1979 No Nukes Concerts and Rally. Hello, Harvey. How are you doing?
Hey, great, Mike. Great to be with you.
Yeah. Can you hear me? You said you can hardly hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Okay. We finally get to talk. Now, you're in Cape Cod. Is that where you live?
No, I'm just visiting here right now. It's pouring down rain. It's cold, but it's great to be here.
Okay. What are you involved? What's your newest project? Are you involved in writing or on the radio or with the Occupy movement? Or tell us what you're doing now.
Well, all of the above. I'm going to be speaking at Occupy Boston at noon on Sunday, and I'm writing right now a piece going to put out tonight about how the Occupy movement really needs to help stop the war in Iran. We are clearly the next major move by the 1% is to get us ever deeper into more and more wars, and really it's essential that the Occupy movement play a major role in preventing this from happening. You know, we have to remember during the Vietnam War, the anti-war movement, the peace movement, prevented Richard Nixon from using nuclear weapons in Vietnam, and now we have to duplicate that victory by preventing the United States from starting yet another insane attack on another country. And I think people need to remember, Iran is not exactly Iraq or Afghanistan. There's 76 million people in Iran. This is a very advanced country with deep ties to China, Russia, India, and you know, the idea that we could just kind of walk into Iran and take away their nuclear weapons is insane. We would never hear the end of a. They would see the end of a war in Iran. They were fought in a war with Iraq in the 80s, and a million people died. I don't know what these idiots. These bloviators out there promoting a new war in Iran think they're doing, but it's total madness, and we have to prevent it from happening.
And how can we do that? How can we and how can the Occupy movement, what can we do to stop it?
Well, we're going to have to organize large demonstrations and all that, but I think we're going to have to think about in terms of like a general strike. I mean, the general strike that hit Oakland was very, very powerful, very important. And, you know, the use of that tactic, it's kind of our own nuclear weapon, and I think that's something we're going to need to think about.
Back in the 60s, you were maybe one of the, you were with the Alternative Press. So you have a historical outlook on this. How big is the Occupy movement? I mean, you know, I'm just, is it, it's a big deal, I think. Do you agree?
Well, I hope it proves to be an even bigger deal than we think it might be. You know, it's every organizer's dream, a spontaneous eruption of committed young activists all over the country, you know, sticking with it. And you know, the problem that we have as a society is we have a huge body of people who are unemployed and underemployed. A lot of them are young. And that, in turn, can turn into a critical mass of organizing. So, you know, this is what we're looking to. People are desperate. And they're desperate because since 1941, actually, the whole country has been tied up in 70 years now in military spending. And when you siphon off the best part of your economy and the best part of your manpower, or person power, workforce, into worthless, useless military drainage, you wind up with a country that can't be sustained. And that's what we have now. The United States cannot be sustained the way it's going. And so we really have to stop these wars. And we know that, you know, the Bush attack on Iraq has resulted in at least $3 trillion of pure waste and just complete trashing of the core of our economic well-being as well as our ecological well-being. And now we have since the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan are clearly, you know, nonsense and always have been nonsense and are more or less winding down, the 1% needs to find another way to waste our resources. And it looks like they're lining up to do Iran, but this is really way beyond any stretch of sanity. I mean, Iran is a really big, powerful country. The idea that the United States could walk in there and just kind of gently remove their nuclear weapons is utterly, if they have them, is utterly insane.
What would be the motivation that the Obama's administration or the powers that be would, what would be their motivation for doing this, for attacking Iran? I mean, deep in their gut.
Well, the war corporations, the military contractors, they want a war. They need a war. They're running out of wars. They have to have a constant supply of war. And for Obama, you know, he would satisfy them. And then, of course, you know, Bush's calculation in 2003 was that as a president, as a wartime president, he would have an easier time getting reelected. You know, there's this sort of rule of thumb that presidents in war always get reelected. And I think there are plenty of advisors telling Obama that that's, you know, the case for him and that he should pursue it.
You know, for years, just in passing conversation, some of us might say, wait until the revolution or the revolution will be televised, or some passing reference to the revolution. Do you think maybe, possibly, this Occupy movement is the revolution that we've been looking for?
Well, it's a form of revolution. You do have people rising up. You do have people committed to making change. I mean, it's just started. It's only 2 months old. It is a spontaneous uprising, and it's being peopled by citizens who have no real options. And these are people who are unemployed, who have no jobs, no prospect of anything in their lives, because the economy is so skewed. You know, the two clear signs of a falling empire are excess military spending and overseas adventurism, and bifurcation, a split between rich and poor. We saw this in Greece and Rome and Babylon and Britain. You know, any country that sets out to create an empire, the rich get too rich, the poor get too poor and too numerous, and too much resource goes into military. This is just flat out the rule of thumb, and that's what's happened in the United States. And so now you have all these millions of people who are reasonably well educated, but can't get work. And so what are they going to do? Are they going to sit around and do nothing? Well, some went off and joined the Tea Party, a couple of them. But the Occupy is really what it's about, because these people understand, know what the issues are, know what the problem is. You know, 1% of the country controlling 40 to 50% of the wealth. It's insane. And it's not sustainable. And so, you know, is it a revolution? Well, if we prevent the attack in Iraq and we can start to cut into the military budget and you know, reverse the sick priorities that have dominated this country since the Cold War, then maybe it will be a revolution. But, you know, it's a long time coming, especially in a nonviolent framework. You know, nonviolent revolutions don't happen quickly. And it's going to take a long period of time. I mean, I've been fighting nuclear power since 1973. It's 38 years now. We still haven't quite won. I think we're close. I think anybody who gets involved in the Occupy movement now and has a clear vision of what they think they want, which we have for a long time in the anti-nuclear movement, you got to be prepared to spend 3 or 4 decades on this. This is not going to happen in 3 or 4 months or weeks or years. It's going to take a lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Well, Harvey, thank you very much for all your decades of work, and thank you for being a guest. I hope you'll come back again. Not too long, and at the start of our talk, you told us what you were doing. I wish we could just repeat that. Where are you going to work, and people? Where will people see you, and what are you working on as far as your writing goes? If you could just repeat that for us.
Okay, well, I write regularly for freepress.org, www.freepress.org. I added a website called nukefree.org, nukefree.org. I have a radio show on the Talktainment Radio Network called Solartopia, our Green Power Hour. And I'm writing pretty regularly. I'm actually writing a book now with a friend on green cures for cancer, non-toxic, non-invasive cures for cancer. So I'm a busy guy.
You are. And it's thank you for taking time to speak with us. And I'll be in touch, and I hope you can find some time again in the next couple of months.
You call me anytime. I'm glad to be on with you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Harvey. Have a good night.
Thank you, Mike. Take care.
Bye.
What does it mean to be free? What has the war economy done to the lives of Americans? Join others for all the solutions at thespiritualun.org, because another world is possible. No human being is an enemy of another human being. War is a manufactured and artificial state. There is another way to live in this world through a new system that is uplifting to all. Let's go to a higher love. What did Jesus really teach? Did he teach onward Christian soldiers and bomb one another? No. John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Abraham Lincoln, our founding fathers, and you, your neighbors, all reaching for the best part of the human spirit. TheSpiritualUN.org. Come together with us, carrying forward this nation's founders' universal ideals through the rejection of revenge, aggression, racism, war, and the debt slavery system. Real men don't kill. War and the debt slavery system is a crime against us all, against God, against all life, and is not fit for a progressive world. Join together here at thespiritualun.org, and we will build that new world for the 99% of us, without any leaders, corrupt as they are, because in the new system that is uplifting to all, they aren't necessary anymore. thespiritualun.org.
The New American Dream presents an American Hero Special. Recently, we honored patriotic singer-songwriter Toby Keith. He put a boot up their ass. Awesome. Then we honored General Norman Schwarzkopf, General Colin Powell, General Tommy Franks, General something-something Petraeus, all the other generals out there in charge of our patriotic military who are protecting us from people plowing mountains with oxen, killing them before they fly those oxen over here and dive bomb us with box cutters and don't allow us to worship in the churches of our choice. Last week, we honored Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who uttered those words, will live forever in Catholic hymnals and on the sides of police cars. Same awesome style of Madeleine Albright speaking about the children dying in Iraq during the sanctions. We came, we saw, he died. This week, we honor all of you who stand like robots whenever the American flag passes by in a parade, or when the national anthem is played, or any sporting event from 7th grade intramural checkers to the Super Bowl. You stand without even thinking, and for that we thank you, for if you had a brain or stop for a moment to think of what you're doing, what you're being asked to do, condone America and its wars, killing, in order to steal from other nations, you'd crawl out of that stadium on your knees in shame. For that, we salute you. You're not a pervert or a murderer or an insane person. You are an American, an American hero.
Well, it's been a long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. The Tinker Farm family, Sam, Ray, Herb, along with a couple dozen local farmers, have taken over Conoposhick Farms, the large area hog confinement factory corporation. Sam Tinker, the negotiator for the Rebel Farm Group out on the road by the mailbox, has asked to talk to Joe Coffee, Coffee Joe, the Democratic candidate for Congress. Jane and Joe Coffee have been talking, arguing, agonizing over whether, since Joe has a real chance at actually getting elected now, whether he should play it safe and not go out to the farm standoff. The two reporters camped on the front sidewalk jumped up to catch the volunteers streaming out the front door as Joe and Jane walked out the back door. "Can you drive?" Joe asked Jane as they walked to their car. She took the scenic route out of town, down First Street, past the grocery store, past the high school ball field that Joe liked to see, past the Coffee Joe scarecrow. They drove in silence, in unison, looking out the windshield and the side windows. They passed the rear guard of the law enforcement brigade, scattered green National Guard jeeps and heavy trucks blocking entry or exit from the side roads, sitting in the groves. Jane swerved to avoid the corpse of a rooster pheasant in the road. She pressed her front teeth together as she saw its bright red and orange plumage. Joe remarked that there were only a scattering of sightseer vehicles now and no television trucks inside like there had been before. She slowed for two pickups, forming a V across the road, then stopped. Two men with shotguns on their hips walked menacingly to both sides of the car. Jane recognized the young men and the half dozen others standing around the pickups holding weapons with seed corn caps pulled tight on their foreheads as local farmers. "Coffee Joe," the one on Joe's side sneered. He turned to the others and said, "Let him go." Jane nudged forward with her foot, tapping the brake. Tap, tap, tapping. She squeezed through the space between the pickups with an inch on each side. Joe twisted the rearview mirror his way to pull his tie tight. Inside the compound, Sam Tinker stood behind his command desk, one of Andy's hunting knives sticking in the top of the desk. Sam stared out the window, holding the phone to his ear with his left hand, gripping the old 12-gauge in his right.
"Be careful." Karen Tinker looked out her kitchen window, just barely able to see the Conoposhick Family Farms compounds. The phone clicked. "Can't talk," said Sam. "How's things?" Karen adjusted the flow of the hot water into her dishes. "Oh, beautiful." She wiped her cheek with the back of her hand, shut off the water, then stuck a knuckle into her eye to gouge out the soap. As the Coffee stopped at the intersection to check in with the state patrol, Herbert Tinker stuck his right hand into his chest like a bear claw. He staggered against the big table in the office building command center. His cap tumbled onto the table. Herb went to one knee as the men in the room rushed to him. In the bathroom, Eddie Zook heard the commotion and thought it was the federal rush. He turned back to the mirror, hurried to finish his face painting, running green streaks with his pointer fingers down his streak cheeks. Eddie came out of the bathroom to see Sam and Ray and half a dozen men helping Herb to settle into the leather lounge chair in one of the side offices. Eddie fidgeted with his headband, checked his pants, boot, shirt, shotgun. "They gonna be all right?" Sam grabbed his weapon from the table, walked past Eddie to the door, then stopped and held the door open for Eddie. They walked side by side in silence down the lane toward the mailbox. Ray said the feds was really moving around last night, said Eddie. Sam looked straight ahead, on the point. Eyes on the mailbox area, now spotting the tall FBI agent. Eddie smelled cigar smoke from the road. The ditch was filled with little purple flowers he'd seen everywhere the last 2 days. He adjusted his bandana down to just above his eyebrows. Last night, he found aviator sunglasses in one of the offices. He took them out of his shirt pocket and managed to put them on with one hand while keeping pace with old Sam, the Farminator, as you've been calling him.
This time, the Coffees left their car with the first day patrolman. The car was driven away by another lawman in a brown hat. Joe and Jane were immediately met by the FBI woman who had taken charge of Jane the day before. She showed them to a waiting golf cart. The agent drove while Joe sat in front and Jane rode side saddle on the back. She noticed there were no officers or agents milling about at this time. The road was parked full of a variety of green camouflaged National Guard vehicles. The hillside viewing area that had been covered with blankets and picnic coolers and people the day before was now covered with black and white cows. Jane counted 5 black helicopters hovering above, nighthawks scouring the grass blades for prey. The woman agent pulled up 10 yards from the mailbox, keeping her hands tight on the wheel and looking straight ahead, her forearm cords taut. She bid them get off. Jane climbed over the back and Joe hopped down just as the cart skidded away in the gravel. They were joined by the tall aging agent, 2 pens in the front shirt pocket of his clean white shirt, holding a 3x5 card with both hands at his waist, a football coach with his favorite plays close by. Again, Jane felt the demonic aura of the agent, the falseness of his manner, the science teacher come assassin. She ached to figure him out, to know him, and hated it that she could not. From behind them came Sheriff Smith, now wearing a black and silver Oakland Raiders cap with green and black hunting jacket and pants to match the uniform of the rebel farmers.
Without speaking, they joined a line and walked toward the mailbox where Sam and Eddie waited. Jane looked for her FBI woman keeper, joined her in leaning against the front quarter panel of Sheriff Smith's white patrol car. The agent offered a cigarette. They smoked and watched the mailbox. At the green John Deere tractor mailbox, the agent, Joe Coffey, and Sheriff Smith turned to face off with Sam and Eddie. The two rebels stood on a slight uphill, making them imposing. Sam, tall, hairy, and tired. Eddie, twitchy with his shotgun butt on his thigh, wearing the bluish-orange headband over his rusty hair. Wire-rimmed sunglasses, green pants tucked into his black boots. Green t-shirt. Where'd Governor Smoothie? Eddie smiled as he drawled. Sam looked over at him, and Eddie looked away and put his chin into the air as if checking the wind direction. The governor will not be here. Mr. Coffey has been authorized to meet with you. Indeed, said the senator. Inside, said the agent. Joe studied Eddie. Just a minute. Joe put a finger into the air. He looked to Smith. I'll be right back, said Joe. Smith smirked, shook his head at the ground. He and the agent and Eddie and Sam began pawing the dirt as Joe hurried off between the patrol cars into the ditch. He walked another car lengths down the road, looked all around, dived into both back pockets, pulling out the pen he'd hoped to find. He reached into his front pocket, pulled out the fresh toilet paper, smoothed it out, laid it on the nearest car. He tried to breathe deep, tried to slow down, tried to write slowly, neatly, with something approaching the penmanship of his third-grade daughter. He wrote, Eddie Z, FBI.
Hey, you fall in? Let's go, Coffee. Where are you? The agent looked over the top of one of the patrol cars. Joe let the pen sit on the car, tore the note from the rest of the toilet paper, folded it, and put it in his shirt pocket. He took one step, then leaned back and brushed the pen into the ditch. "Right here," he called, "coming." As he moved between the cars, he bent down as if zipping up. He waved and smiled at Jane and the girls and trotted across the road. "Sorry," he said. "Well," said Sam. Joe stepped forward between Eddie and Sam. "We'll have him home early," said Eddie, smiling. They turned and walked up the gentle slope. Eddie and Sam laid their weapons over their shoulders with the barrels pointed towards Smith and the FBI man. Eddie glared at Joe as Joe kept his eyes on the road. Eddie took his right hand and pulled his hair behind his ear. When they reached the red brick office building, Sam stopped to visit with three young men seated on a bench, their legs crossed, plastic gas station coffee cups in the crook of their laps, shotguns resting on the seat, their seed corn caps pushed high on their foreheads. Joe turned to look around. He heard Garth Brooks. He saw into one of the confinements, a hatless rebel farmer leaning on a rake just inside the door, and two men seated on folded chairs with shotguns over their laps staring at him from in front of the machine shed.
"They've been buried," Eddie said. "Couldn't nothing been done about it. They resisted arrest, you know?" Joe noticed the blue tattoo dot under Eddie's left eye, surrounded by freckles. "Who?" he said, looking at Sam. "Let's go." Sam held the door open for Joe and Eddie to move inside the headquarters building. Chairs lining the tables were filled. Three empty metal folding chairs remained at the front of the room. Joe followed Sam as talk stopped. Eddie stayed by the door, leaning against the wall. Herb shuffled out of the office, helped by Ray. Herb took one of the front chairs. Sam led Joe to another and stood in front of the chair on the end to address the meeting. He repeated the demands of the farmers that a new farm bill be written, specific provisions included with the intent of favoring the family farm over corporate agriculture, a cap on subsidies, subsidies based on individuals rather than production, a limit on the size of farms, the banning of corporate ownership of Nebraska farms.
Then he sat. A few of the men stood to sound off. Herb spoke from his chair. Sam rose again. Then Joe was asked to say something. He stood in front of his chair. "I don't have much to say," he said. "I just came here to listen. We also need to talk about the hostages." All eyes found Joe, stern, serious. Mr. Coffey, Herbert Tinker, pushed hard and balanced on the back of his chair to stand. He removed his hat and held it at his waist. "We are ready to die," he said. "Nothing different than what's already happening, just all at once." A backup chorus underlined Herb's statement. Herb pointed his hat at the 100 men facing them. "These men are ready to die to save the family farm. This is serious business. It is to us." "Are you ready to kill, though?" asked Joe. Sam and half of the men looked back to Eddie Zook, who studied the floor. Herb watched the hat in his hands, then turned to Joe. "You're the Democratic representative." A small older man spoke from the side of the room. "There's lots of good Democrats here. What are you going to do for us?" Joe recognized Stanley Parker, the man who had given him the first signature to get on the ballot. "Well," said Joe, "I'm just a candidate." He smiled and was met by faces that asked what was funny. "But if I got elected, I'd do what I could to help you." "That's then. That's what if," said a younger man seated next to the older speaker. "What are you going to do now? We're in trouble now." And that's the news from Mount Liberty, where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO high school woodshop instructors are about average.
And that's it for another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. We're glad you stayed with us tonight, and we hope you'll come back same time, same place next week. Be sure to stay tuned to Black Op Radio with our producer, Len Osanek, immediately following our show. We'd like to thank World News Trust and the Spiritual UN for their sponsorship of our show. And now, good night, Mike.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm down there. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
WorldNewsTrust.com is a new site that is trying to define the new mainstream. Their founder, Francis Goodwin, is a veteran journalist who set out on his own a few years ago and has slowly carved out a niche. What does the site do? It tells the truth and provides a place for intelligent columnists to talk about what's really happening in America. It's a good site with people who care about what's going on in America and the world. It's a great site with many loyal writers, including Ramsey Baroud, Harvey Wasserman, Mickey Z. There are too many to list them all. Some content is published on World News Trust first, some is published elsewhere and copied to World News Trust. We also welcome back World News Trust, who continue to support our show and host our website. Visit World News Trust for a dose of news with enlightened and informed opinion. It's not like Fox or CNN or the New York Times. It's World News Trust, defining the new mainstream in online journalism. Visit them today and tell them the New American Dream Radio Show sent you. WorldNewsTrust.com. What does it mean to be free? What has the war economy done to the lives of Americans? Join others for all the solutions at thespiritualun.org, because another world is possible. No human being is an enemy of another human being. War is a manufactured and artificial state. There is another way to live in this world through a new system that is uplifting to all. Let's go to a higher love. What did Jesus really teach? Did he teach onward Christian soldiers and bomb one another? No. John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Abraham Lincoln, our founding fathers, and you, your neighbors, all reaching for the best part of the human spirit. TheSpiritualUN.org. Come together with us, carrying forward this nation's founders' universal ideals through the rejection of revenge, aggression, racism, war, and the debt slavery system. Real men don't kill. War and the debt slavery system is a crime against us all, against God, against all life, and is not fit for a progressive world. Join together here at thespiritualun.org, and we will build that new world for the 99% of us, without any leaders, corrupt as they are, because in the new system that is uplifting to all, they aren't necessary anymore. thespiritualun.org.
Oh.